Başlayalım. I confess that I went to college. Call me a snob, call me an elitist. I'm not running for office, so I can say anything that's on my mind. I think higher education is a good thing. It was a good thing for me. It's a good thing for my daughter. And therefore, I recommend it for your children as well. I even recommend it for Rick Santorum's children. College didn't indoctrinate me to hate religion. I was Jewish before I went to college, and I'm still Jewish. The first 3 years of my 7 years of higher education were in London, and you know about Europe, right? It's a socialist boot camp. But even there, I didn't find that the University of London was dedicated to re-engineering my capitalist convictions into freedom-hating, religion-belittling, profit-denying, Wall Street-detesting, liberal-loving, tree-hugging, environmentalist, socialist, atheist, and anti-materialistic fanatical philosophy. Former Senator Santorum did okay. He's got 3 higher education degrees. I don't see any danger of him becoming an enemy of liberty anytime soon, unless you believe that his relentless attacks on women's rights and equal access to medical care is in and of itself an attack on liberty. I know that candidates say ridiculous things during campaigns, but Santorum took my breath away. The idea that you can appeal to blue-collar voters by attacking colleges as indoctrination mills that relentlessly pursue conservative, religious, faithful, innocent, and pure souls in order to convert them into democratic, atheist automatons is just incomprehensible to me. It's not even in the interests of those very blue-collar voters. Every study that I have seen ties promotion, income, job satisfaction, and security to higher education. Broadly speaking, the more you have of it, the better off you are. It's true that some people simply are not meant for higher education. That's true. In my own family, extended family, there are several members who never went to college. Some of them are brilliant and successful, and they were just not suitable for college. That's okay, too. Even in these cases, vocational schools and professional training would benefit young adults. But this anti-intellectual, science-denying, popular, brutish assault on higher education at a time when America is falling further and further behind other advanced countries in educational standards is incredible to me. It's like asking, what do you prefer for Americans, ignorance or apathy? And the response of some politicians seems to be, I don't know and I don't care. Or do they believe what the poet Ogden Nash once facetiously wrote, progress might have been all right once, but it has gone on far too long. Or is citing Ogden Nash in and of itself evidence of elitism? Nash, by the way, went to Harvard, but dropped out after a year and never returned to university. Rick Santorum has an MBA and a JD. Mitt Romney has an MBA. Newt Gingrich was a college history professor. Ron Paul is a medical doctor. They haven't become stark, raving liberals. Well, maybe Mitt Romney. What gives? What's good for them and their children is too good for other people's kids. It's not that college necessarily makes you smart. There are plenty of dumb college graduates. And it's not that college necessarily makes you good. There are plenty of terrorists who have university degrees. It's not that college necessarily makes you successful. There are plenty of failed college graduates. It's not that college necessarily makes you a more discerning person. There are plenty of undiscerning and unsophisticated college graduates. And some of the critique of American universities is accurate. College is too expensive. The faculty is not always proficient or serious or interested. The courses are not always, how shall we say, socially or intellectually relevant. As Saul Lieberman once said in introducing Gershom Scholem, two of the great 20th century Jewish scholars, nonsense is nonsense. But the history of nonsense is scholarship. There is some nonsense on American campuses. But higher education increases the likelihood of greater knowledge, sophistication, discernment, self-confidence, self-awareness, self-satisfaction, enlightenment, economic security, and social progress. It doesn't guarantee, but it increases the chances of doing the right thing. Jews know this in our kishkes. All of us have had grandparents who, when we were young, introduced us to their friends by saying, the doctor is four and the lawyer is two. Judaism, from the beginning, highly prized intellectual exertion. We embraced science. It's why so many Jews are medical doctors and scientists. We have always been intellectual pluralists, hardly ever agreeing on anything. Any page of the Talmud is replete with hot, passionate disagreements. It was the pursuit of truth that counted, and argumentation enhances the pursuit of truth. Hearing other opinions. But Jewish tradition did agree on one thing, unanimously, without argument. The value of study. The Talmud envisions that the second question that we will be asked after we die when we meet our Maker is, did you set aside regular time for study? The obligation of Torah study was lifelong, until the day of your death, according to Maimonides. And it was not only Torah, it was all matters of higher understanding. What the Talmud calls the dialectics of wisdom, how one thing flows from another. Maimonides himself was a medical doctor, an Aristotelian philosopher, and a legal expert. Study was expected for everyone, whether you are an adult or a child, whether you are intellectually quick or slow, whether you are rich or poor. The story is told of a sage who tried to persuade a successful and wealthy man to study. The man said, I'm too busy with my business affairs. I have no time. If you do not have time to study, the sage responded, you are not a wealthy man, but a pitiful pauper. Special attention was paid to poor children, what we would call children of the workers. We did not abandon them to their economic destiny, depriving them of the benefits of education, trying to persuade them and their parents that higher study was for snobs and elitists. If they could not afford to study, the obligation fell on the community to support them. Torah will come from poor children, stated the Talmud, emphatically. I have not met a person who would deny their own children the benefits and opportunities of higher education, even candidates for president. They would just deny it for someone else's kids. Of course, there were always people whose talents lay elsewhere. Not everyone can or should be a PhD. But that doesn't absolve them from the obligation of study, whatever they could, whenever they could, at their own pace. Whoever can go to college should. It is not elitist to go to college. It helps us to better realize our potential. Not only does higher education train us for greater specialization in a world that requires it, if you don't go to college, you fall behind. Everybody needs additional training. Every 10 years, you need additional training. But it also deepens our understanding of the human experience and human possibilities. It increases our potential to be part of society and to have a collective impact. We are better able to grapple with a morally complex and an increasingly interdependent world. And it may fortify your faith, actually. It did for me. Apparently, it also did for Rick Santorum, right? College is where you meet others, both in books and on campus, who think differently and test your beliefs. And if you can emerge from that environment intact, your beliefs will actually be strengthened. And if you loosen or abandon your beliefs, maybe those beliefs were not so hot in the first place. In the Torah portion for the week, Tetzaveh, we read more details about what was in the tabernacle, the portable sanctuary in the desert. The parsha begins with a description of the Ner Tamid, which has sometimes been called the eternal flame. See, every congregation, every sanctuary has an eternal flame. It comes from our Torah portion. Except no one really understands what the description in our Torah portion actually means. No one knows what the word Tamid means or what the flame was. Some scholars believe that it was a lamp that was kindled tamid, not eternally, but regularly, from evening until morning. This seems to be the plain meaning of the biblical text. Other scholars believe that the Ner Tamid was a lamp that was always lit. They understand tamid to mean all the time, eternally. Josephus believed that the Ner Tamid was one of the seven lamps of the tabernacle, menorah itself, and that lamp, one of those seven lamps, which was designated as the Ner Tamid, that lamp was always lit and was used to light the other six lamps of the menorah. Rabbinic sages reinterpreted the light to imply the light of Torah study. That is what should be perpetually lit. The rabbis taught that study is like a lamp. It is utilitarian. It lights the way for you in the dark. But not only that, it is also socially useful. Like the Ner Tamid in the Bible, its light is used to light other candles. In a great midrash in our parsha, the sages write, "Just see how the words of Torah give forth light when a person studies. He who does not study can be compared to one who stands in a dark place. As soon as he starts walking, he stumbles against a stone. He then strikes a gutter, falls into it, and knocks his face on the ground, all because he has no lamp in his hand. It is the same with the individual who has no Torah study in him. He strikes against sin, stumbles, and dies. But those who study give forth light wherever they may be. It's like standing in the dark with a lamp in his hand. When he sees a stone, he does not stumble. Neither does he fall over a gutter, because he has a lamp in his hand." And the rabbis conclude, "Just as the light of a lamp is undiminished, even if a million candles are lit from it, so will he who studies give off light to millions of people."